Hey everybody, happy Monday. I'm Tony Chen and this is Fish and Bits, a business and data podcast on the world of seafood. Today, we're going to be talking about the topic that has been covered by basically all seafood news outlets over this last week and what sent me down a rabbit hole trying to learn more. I'm talking about the potential sale of Benchmark and my ensuing research on the important role of genetics in aquaculture. Over this last week, an announcement was made by the company that said that the publicly traded company, Benchmark Holdings, would be put up for sale following the board's conclusion that, and I quote, "the current share price materially undervalues the combined value of Benchmark's businesses and long-term prospects of the company." The company has many lines of business, but one of their significant lines of business is their genetics line, where they manage the broodstock and breeding programs for a number of aquaculture species, including salmon. These breeding programs are critical not just for a large supply of the industry's eggs each year, but more importantly, they are a key component of pushing the boundaries of welfare and science behind the entire aquaculture industry. In this episode, I'm going to talk on a few items related to the importance of genetics, using salmon as a primary example. I'll start by providing some additional context behind the Benchmark sale and why I believe genetics may be the reason for their announcement. I'll then talk about the history behind selective breeding in aquaculture and examples such as why the ease of breeding salmon is one of the reasons that we farm the species today. From there, I'll talk about the power of genetics and how some in the industry believed it's a commonly ignored metric of progress. I'll also touch on concepts like genetic modification and what the future of the technology may look like. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode, so let's dive in. I'm going to start off and talk about some of the numbers behind Benchmark and their announcement for going on sale. The reason I want to share these are not to provide investment advice or try to be a financial analyst on this specific stock. I'm also not here to draw any conclusions on the internal state of the company. Instead, I simply found the public data reported by the company and their comments to be interesting in the context of genetics for the industry. When companies typically go for sale, you don't usually see them be so public about the reasons why. In their statement, they directly said, "We believe that our stock is undervalued," and they believe that there are buyers out there who will be willing to pay more. Looking at their public financials, what you see is some of the potential reasons as to why they may believe that. As a company, they have three major revenue streams: genetics, which sells eggs, advanced nutrition that provides starter feeds and functional feeds, and animal health, which are their sea lice treatment solutions. Together, across these three lines, they reported revenues of roughly $215 million last year, of which genetics makes up just shy of 40% of their total revenue. Then, if you look at the current stock price of the company, you'll find that the market capitalization, or the total value of the company's shares of stocks, to be valued at right around $400 million. For publicly traded companies, this market cap value is typically what is looked at as the total value of the business. And the multiple between revenue and market cap can be used to compare the strength of the company. For Benchmark, this roughly equates to a multiple of 2 at their current numbers. Now, global financial markets and the state of the economy can impact these multiples, but compared to other companies right now, you can see why the board at Benchmark may be unhappy. Compared to farming companies in the industry, a company like Salmar is currently trading at almost a 3x multiple of their revenue, while tech companies like Microsoft are currently trading at roughly 10x multiples. I believe that one of the reasons Benchmark is so adamant about their value is because they view themselves to be more tech-like than commodities-based, and genetics are the prime example for that. I haven't spoken to anyone internally at the company about this, so I may be completely wrong, but I wanted to share with you the perspective that led me to look at the topic of genetics even further. So, can you make the comparison that genetics and aquaculture is similar to tech? I would argue yes, and let me explain why. People value technology businesses so highly because of their ability to scale and change the way business is done. The rise of behemoths like Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, and numerous others have shown exponential growth, not just in the early phases of their business, but even when they are some of the biggest companies in the world. The progress of genetics has also shown similar patterns of trajectory. There are examples in the agricultural world, such as how scientists selectively bred cows to increase milk production by 30% over a 20-year period. Chickens similarly reduced their growth rate by 400% over a period of 48 years in the mid-1900s. In 1925, the average chicken or broiler took 112 days to reach market weight of just over 1 kilogram. By 1960, 35 years later, that same chicken reached a market size in 63 days and a harvest weight of 1.5 kilos. When you look at the history of genetics in salmon, you'll see that we are currently at the very beginning of the story of fish breeding and genetics. One of the reasons salmon farming started was because we understood how to breed them. Their eggs are large in the scope of fish eggs, so they're easier to handle, and they reproduce in freshwater environments that we can reproduce easily in a lab. By the late 1800s, the United States was already starting programs to raise salmon in captivity to restock rivers. Compared to other aquaculture markets like sea bass, the ability to produce and breed that species wasn't discovered until the 1970s. The ocean environment is just full of unknowns, and we have so much to learn. Because of this, my conclusion is that we haven't seen the same exponential growth potential of genetics impact the industry of aquaculture just yet. It wasn't that long ago that the broodstock used to spawn eggs and start new family lines were simply wild-caught fish. Companies who run breeding programs in salmon, like Benchmark, Aquagen, and Hendrick Genetics, have roughly bred 15 total generations of salmon in the history of commercial salmon farming. Think about that for a second. Each time when salmon reach the age of reproductivity, we have a chance to choose certain fish based on characteristics like growth to harvest their eggs and sperm, or milt in the case of fish, to breed for the next round of farmed salmon. Comparatively, humans have selectively bred cows since 9000 BC. That's over 11,000 years and thousands of generations of cattle. So compared to other forms of agriculture, aquaculture truly is at the beginning stages of development. Is it possible to forecast what that future may look like? Well, a research paper published a couple of years ago by the genetics company Aquagen provides some key insights and data that forecast how the power of genetics could change the industry looking forward 30 years. Let me walk you through some of their findings and what I found as extremely fascinating science. The paper is titled The Power of Genetics, and it was published back in 2022. One of the key theses behind the paper is that when we project out the future growth of aquaculture, models typically evaluate topics such as licensing, consumer demand, carrying capacity, and other input costs. Typically, these reports almost never mention how genetic developments may impact that forecast. I'm also guilty of doing the same. My previous episode on the future of aquaculture growth never spoke to the potential impact of genetics. Here's the major takeaway from their findings. In 2020, Norway produced 1.3 million tons of salmon as a country. And at one point, government policymakers forecasted ambitious growth that the country would be able to produce 5 million tons by the year 2050. This paper concluded that just through the genetic progress that we've seen in the last 40 years, by 2050, improvements in the genetics of salmon would be able to account for 77% of the needed growth to meet that 5 million ton forecast. That's right, you heard that correctly. They concluded that if all else is held the same number of sites, the same allocated biomass, the same types of production, genetics by itself would enable the country to more than double its current output. It almost seems impossible to believe, right? Well, I thought so too, until I read further through the research and the actual experiment that was conducted. Here's the breakdown, and some of it truly sounds like science fiction. It's awesome. The main portion of the study was to create a baseline for understanding how far salmon genetics have come the last 40 years. That data could then be used to forecast what potential scenarios we could expect looking into the future. To do that, what the researchers did was raise salmon using eggs from generation 11 of their broodstock, but varied the milt from various generations from back in history. The company has cryogenically frozen sperm from generations of salmon going all the way back to generation zero, which started in the 1970s. Using the differences in the measured growth rates, you could then use the data to estimate how much change has happened in the genetics of farmed salmon. The team then took those baselines and developed four different scenarios with how much progress could be made in generations 11 through 24, which represent the number of breeding cycles that will happen between now and 2050. You have to keep in mind that when breeders are selecting for traits, growth is not always the most important factor. There are other considerations like health and quality that matter as well. At the low end of that forecast is a linear line that just extrapolates the same rate of progress that we've seen in the last 11 generations. For the most aggressive forecasts, what you see is a progression similar to the exponential curves that we saw in poultry in the mid-1900s. And this aggressive forecast, I'd like to note, is not just an estimate. The researchers claimed that some of these aggressive growth values have already been seen in some of their broodstock. It's just a question of whether we choose to select for these particular traits or not. For example, in the conservative scenario, the forecast shows that by 2050, the time needed for salmon to be in the ocean would be 12 months, down 4 months from the current average of 16 months. In the aggressive scenario, we'd be able to reduce the time in sea down to 7 months, more than cutting the current time needed by 50%. And this is without larger smolt or advanced genetic science. This is simply following the breeding programs that exist today, choosing to breed fish that express desirable traits, and continuing the process of raising salmon. That's how they got to the number that with breeding, the industry can more than double production volume by just genetic improvements. To some in the industry, I'm sure the idea that we don't need to modify any regulation, yet we can still increase harvest volumes significantly, sounds pretty enticing. But that's not the only place my mind goes as I think about the potential of genomics. Reading the study and thinking about the modern state of genetics, I quickly start to wonder about what the true potential can be with modern computing power. Let me explain. My understanding is that selected breeding programs for any animal has been fairly rudimentary in the past. We see animals that grow quickly, remain healthy, and have desirable traits, and then we choose to breed them with mates of similar traits. That's how we ended up with so many different types of dogs and why farmed animals look so different than their wild counterparts. At the end of the day, these traits are encoded in genes, and the combination of genes are what make up the DNA that gets passed from parents to their offspring. That DNA is just a unique combination of base pairs, A, T, C, and G, that make up any organism's unique genomic sequence. What we are doing when we selectively breed animals is adjust their genomic sequence, but we're doing it in a way where we're trying to improve our chance that the trait is being passed off to an offspring. Two quickly growing fish should increase the chance that your offspring will also be a quickly growing fish. That said, modern computing capabilities make it possible to increase the odds of those chances. The entire human genome was sequenced back in 2003, and that project, the Human Genome Project, mapped every single base pair in a human's DNA. The challenge of this project wasn't the identification of the base pairs. Again, we've known that for a long time there are only four letters. The challenge was that there are approximately 6.4 billion base pairs in a human genome, and we didn't have the computing power back in the late 90s to handle that amount of data. Things have changed quite dramatically in the 20 years since, and our ability to not just store but process that amount of data is completely different. At the time, the Human Genome Project cost $2.7 billion and 13 years to complete. Today, you can pay a few hundred dollars and within a few weeks receive the data behind an entire genome of an animal. All this data can lead to massive discoveries. Using these datasets, we can start to parse through the specific genes that may lead to answers to some of our world's hardest challenges. For human health, think about cancer, Alzheimer's, diabetes. The answers to how to treat these illnesses may lie in genetics. There are fascinating technologies such as CRISPR that make editing of genes much easier, but we're honestly still at the very beginning of the technology and the impacts that it will have. So back to seafood. Let me share about how genetics could change the salmon industry specifically. It's not hard to imagine that through specific genetic modifications that concerns such as farmed fish interbreeding with wild salmon, the challenges of sea lice, or diseases like pancreas disease could be solved in the future. There are a lot of positives, but there are also some negatives. with how new the science is, we're still, as a society, just starting to understand the potential impacts and downstream effects of genetically modified organisms. Some of the concerns are valid, and some of them may just be fear of the unknown. Regardless, this research has really changed my perspective and viewpoint about the future of genomics. Maybe it's done the same for you, and maybe Benchmark has a point in putting their company up for sale. It will be really interesting to see how all of this develops in the following months. And that's all for today. I can assure you that I'll be keeping an eye out for what happens, and you can be sure that I'll keep you informed as part of our episodes each week. If you found this episode interesting, please send it to another fellow fish nerd you may know and consider rating our podcast. It helps us a ton and enables us to continue making content like this. Otherwise, I hope you have a great week, and I'll see you again next Monday.